With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Broadcasting from deep in the Yubla-Faris galaxy, on a small planet called Gekonia, east of the albino hills and south of the raging leucistic river, comes the one, the only, Gecko Nation Radio.
Good evening, gecko and reptile enthusiasts. Tonight is June 1st, 2014, and tonight's going to be a great show. Looking forward to it all week, and tonight we have with us a new hobbyist, someone that's got a unique perspective on the gecko community in particular, so I think it's going to be interesting. Daryl Burton is a new guy on the block, and he hasn't been doing geckos for too long, but he just started breeding leopard geckos this year. He does have a long history being interested in herpetoculture, and in back in the day, back in the 80s, he was really into snakes, and he actually ran a business called the Mouse Factory, which was a really popular feeder company back then when I was a kid, and when basically herpetoculture was a lot in its infancy than what it is today. So we're gonna reminisce a little bit. We're gonna talk about what it used to be like, some of the differences, changes, and basically from his perspective, from a new hobbyist perspective, you know, how he feels about the gecko community, because that's what we're primarily focused on, you know, not just me, but him as well. So it should be an interesting show. So also, folks, I just want to mention that next week, all right, this is going to be a very special show for all our Canadian fans. And it's a very, very important show. Here in America, we would love to be able to easily get our animals up there to Canada. And God knows, I get a million requests every week. Dave, can you send me a gecko? Can you ship me a gecko? And because the laws are confusing and, you know, it's almost like we have like a mental block. We don't even want to try to figure it out. Well, we're gonna make it easy for everyone. And we're bringing on Sam from Reptile Express Canada next week, okay? And he's going to break it down for us. He's going to explain exactly what it takes and what's involved in shipping to Canada, all right? I really want to be able to get my animals up there. You Canadian folks are really cool people. In fact, every single Canadian person that I've ever corresponded with, either online or in person, has just been awesome. I don't know if it's the clean air up there or what, but you guys are really cool. And we do have a great amount of listeners from Canada, which is great. So that show next week is all for you guys. And Sam is also welcoming your phone calls. So any kind of questions you have about importation or anything, call in. And hopefully you Canadians can call in. I would love it if next Sunday's show was all about you folks from Canada. And if you guys could call in with your questions or comments or whatever. So that's cool. All right, moving on. We do have one more sponsorship spot available for this show. So if you'd like to advertise with Gecko Nation Radio and reach a lot of people, there is one spot left for you. All right, so keep that in mind. You can email me at geckonationradio@gmail.com or message me on Facebook. All right, so if you're a breeder or a business that would like to get some exposure, primarily in the who's who of the gecko world, and reptiles, we do more than just geckos here, of course. Now's your chance. All right. Let's see, what else did I want to mention? Oh, for you guys that want to call in tonight, we're going to do something special for callers, of course, and we're going to have our nightly raffle. I haven't figured out what we're going to give away as a prize, but just so you guys know, the call-in number is 646-478-5331, and we'll likely take your calls throughout the show. I don't think we'll wait till the second half. We'll just take your calls whenever. okay? I'll take them in the order that they come on, so whoever's been on the longest will get on first. All right. And I just want to mention that the promotion with AB Dragons is always going strong, okay? The code is GECKO. Use GECKO at checkout, all in caps, and you're going to get 5% off your FlexWatt and your Dubia Roaches. And speaking of our awesome sponsors, they make this show possible. Check out some of them right now.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David Fine Gecko's creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. Gecko Nation Radio is sponsored by Ron Tremper is the biggest contributor to leopard gecko morph making, known worldwide for his amazing examples of living art. You can now download his Leopard Gecko Care app, his Morph Encyclopedia app called Leopard Gecko Pro, and visit his site, leopardgecko.com, to see where morphs are made. GiantLeopardGecko.com specializes in giant and super giant leopard geckos with a focus on selectively bred, exceptional lines of many different morph combinations, including high-end African fat tails and crested geckos. With over 17 years of experience in herpetoculture, Keith Kiggins brings you quality, integrity, and value. Check out GiantLeopardGecko.com on the web and on Facebook.
Reptiles Express is the absolute best live animal shipping company with great low rates. Debbie is the queen of customer service and will make sure your precious cargo gets to where it needs to. They also have a wide array of shipping supplies from deli cups, snake bags, heat packs, and more. Visit ReptilesExpress.com and become a member today.
And if you're looking for quality food for your Dubia roaches, crickets, mealworms, and superworms, look no further than MS2 Premium Insect Chow. Made with reptiles in mind, it contains no dog food, cat food, or chicken mash. Using only vegetable proteins and high-quality ingredients, MS2 Premium Insect Chow will have your feeders making a beeline for it. Contact MS2ENT.weebly.com, or it can also be purchased at Rainbow Mealworms and AB Dragons. ABDragons.com is your source for the highest quality Dubia roaches, whether you're starting a colony of your own or just need feeders for your insect-eating herps. ABDragons.com can't be beat in quality or price. They are also a huge distributor of FlexWatt reptile heat tape and have very competitive pricing. Check out ABDragons.com online and on Facebook.
All right, folks. And wow, the chat room's filling up fast tonight. That is awesome. Let's see, who do we have? We have Angela Smith from Gamer Geckos. We have Brooke Pulowski, the awesomely talented banner and graphic designer maker. We have Elsa, of course. We have Jim Baldwin. We have Rachel Gratis. We have Soft Kitty. We have Steve Barker. We have Ty Malave. We have Wendy Ontiveros. We have Yvonne Hancock and Vogelsang. Thank you all for joining us tonight. And before we get started, as you guys know, we have a new format to the news. We're kind of shortened the whole segment because it was cutting way into our interview time. So we're kind of, you know, making Steve's job a little bit easier, but also bringing you guys more relevant news. And I also want to take this moment to let everyone know we like constructive criticism. We really want to get this right for you guys, okay? So if there's something about the show that you think we could do better, or if you have an idea for the show, don't hesitate to tell me, okay? As long as you're not rude, I won't be rude back to you. But just, you know, let me know what you think we're doing right or wrong, you know what I mean? Because this is your show, everybody. This, you know, we don't make any money off this. This is for the community, okay? So we want you guys to enjoy it. We want everyone to like it. So email me, geckonationradio@gmail.com, with any of your suggestions. That's right, Brooke. Very funny. Okay. And speaking of the news,
good evening, Gekkonians.
Whoop, there he is. What is up, Steve?
Hey, what's going on?
not much. How have you been?
Pretty good. I think I got too much sun today.
Well, vitamin
I'm
D3
feeling
is good.
It.
Are you taking proper calcium, though, with your vitamin D3 exposure, or what?
Oh, yeah.
Good, good. We don't want any NVD with you. You know, that'll mess up the news completely.
Yeah, really.
How are you settling from your move? Is it all done and over with or what?
Yeah, I'm still rearranging and moving stuff, and I'm pretty much unpacked. I'm just trying to organize now.
Okay, good, good. All right, well, what you got for us tonight?
All right, since you were talking about Canada earlier,
yes.
Ontario farm breeds millions of insects for human consumption. This is pretty cool.
Yummy.
Peterborough, Ontario, Next Millennium Farms, has an interesting take on agriculture. They don't focus on vegetables or fruits. They specialize in protein, but not in the traditional sense. They grow insects for humans to eat, and then mainly crickets and worms. This venture initially started out as a reptile insect farm, raising bugs to feed our reptiles. Mm-hmm. And around the time that they started this, the United Nations released a paper on the Earth's growing population and projected food shortages, which led to a team of McGill students who won a prestigious Holtz Prize after pitching a plan to turn insects into viable food. So this is kind of interesting. You think, Dave, you could eat some mealworms?
only if you want to see me dead. Yeah, I mean, I'm so allergic to them. I don't think I could possibly eat them. I've been hearing a lot about this, and yes, the whole food shortage thing. But,
yeah.
You know, it's funny. The elites of the world will be eating, you know, great Angus steaks, and, you know, the rest of us will be stuck eating worms, I think, in the future, probably. But, you know, people don't realize you're already eating worms when you go to McDonald's and stuff. It's all in that food.
Yep.
It's horrible. So,
Flour has a lot of eggs in it. Moth eggs.
There's, yes,
you
moth
know,
eggs,
you,
yep.
You know, flour usually has them in it. Another interesting thing about it is by producing these, they have reduced their carbon footprint. In the article, it compares beef. It takes 15 pounds of feed to create 1 pound of red meat. And to create 1 pound of insects, it only takes 2 pounds of feed. So you get more out of it. Yeah. And also... They are developing gluten-free and paleo-fed line of insects.
You know, this is
isn't it
you know,
cool,
let me tell you something. This is very cool. And you know what? For all you people out there that are allergic to mealworms and stuff, I think we should try contacting this place because I would bet you that they would have some knowledge about this and maybe, perhaps, because if they're making this for human consumption, they're going to have to you know, tie up all those loose ends. They can't be selling a product that people are going to get sick from. So I'm wondering, because it's for human consumption, I'm wondering if they may have some knowledge about what makes us have a mealworm allergy and maybe possibly ways to stop it. So, Steve,
yeah,
forward me that information.
It would be a hypoallergenic, right?
Right. Maybe you could do a follow-up for us and contact them and see if you can get some more info on that.
All right, yeah, I can do that.
That'd be cool.
Now, here's another thing. If it wasn't for reptile keepers, they may have never even thought of this because originally
that
was all for. So really we helped, you know, reptile keepers helped lead to this. So that's kind of cool too.
That is cool. That is.
Yeah. All right. Our next story is not so cool.
Uh-oh.
A leopard gecko was found dumped in a plastic tub.
I heard about this.
Yeah. The Scottish SPCA was alerted after the lizard was found under a bush in a communal garden in Silver Mills area in Scotland. He was left inside a clear plastic container with air holes. Thankfully, the gecko is in good health and has already been offered a new home where he will receive the care and attention he needs.
Well, hold on a second. Don't we keep them in clear plastic tubs anyway?
Yep, but it was left under a bush, abandoned under a bush.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's horrible.
Yeah, I don't like to hear that.
No. And our last story of the night. Everybody knows who Steve Sykes is.
Oh, yeah. What's going on with him?
A couple months ago, he submitted an article to Reptiles magazine about the care and breeding of knob-tailed geckos, and the July issue has that article in it. So everybody should check it out.
Awesome. Congratulations, Steve.
Knob-tailed geckos. Yeah, that's awesome. And check out his Facebook page because he's got a very proud picture of the magazine.
Nice. I mean, if you can get some exposure and something like that, that's huge. Like when my Diamondback gecko got featured in the Breeder's Choice, in Reptiles magazine, that like made my life. I mean, I've been collecting that magazine since I was a kid. I couldn't believe it. You know, somebody actually really liked it and put it in the magazine when I submitted it. That's just awesome.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah. Good for you, Steve Sykes. He was a guest recently, folks. If you haven't seen him, he's a very well-known, respected breeder in the community. And he did an interview with us about 2 months ago. So for new listeners, go check that out in the archive. And it's also old shows are on iTunes. Steve, what do you got for us for Herp History?
Oh, you know what? I have been so busy. But hold on, I'll grab you something real quick. I totally forgot. I apologize
for
that.
It's no problem.
As I've got some stuff saved here.
You want to do it next
week?
Yeah.
I got you right now. July 9th, 1987, a reptile discovered in Jersey Marsh. A crew of workers sloshing through a northern New Jersey marsh found a 2-foot alligator reptile snapping in the reeds. Officials say the workers captured the reptile called a caiman. Last week in the Hackensack Meadowlands, 4 miles west of Midtown Manhattan, the animal normally is found in the tropical regions of South America. Bergen County Park Supervisor Peter Boss said the caiman probably used to be someone's pet. That was July 9th, 1987. Not really that long ago.
No, it hasn't been. Somebody must have flushed it down the toilet as a baby in New York City, and it made its way into the marshes. I know exactly where that is, right by the Meadowlands Sports Center. Oh, that's crazy. There's all kinds of wildlife there, actually. It's a very, it's kind of untouched, a lot of it, too. But there's a lot of runoff from the city, so it's kind of polluted, you know.
That's horrible.
What are you going to do? It is what it is.
Yeah. I don't like hearing that, though.
Me neither. So what's going on in your collection, Steve?
I'm still collecting a bunch of eggs. I should have some milleyes hatching again here within the next 2 weeks. I should have some more milleyes hatching and probably leopard geckos in about 3 to 4 weeks. I should have some start hatching.
Nice.
Still,
how many milleyes do you have on the ground now?
Other than the one that hatched out, I have 2 clutches of eggs in the incubator right now. Yeah.
Very cool.
No
awesome.
Ball
like
python.
That.
No ball python eggs yet.
Interesting.
I can't
Why
believe
not?
It. I think they're running late. I caught a lot of ovulations at the end of April. So I'm pretty sure between now and July, I should start seeing, I hope, a whole bunch of eggs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, well, let's see. I'm sure you're going to do very well this year. I hope you nail some more of those beautiful red stripe bells, those really beautiful ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, that pairing, the same pairing from last year, I have the most eggs from so far.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait. And I held back four females last year from them. So, and they all,
smart man.
One of them was a radar. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. I may have to grab one of those from you. Those came out great.
Yeah, they did.
All right. Well, very good, Steve. Thank you so much for the news. And we will catch you again next week. Give out your information so people can find you.
Check me out on Facebook and YouTube under BC Barker Creations.
Awesome. All right. Have a good night, Steve.
You too.
All right, folks, we got one last thing before we get started, and that is this. Check it out.
Did you know that since 2006, there's been a treasure trove of history and information on leopard geckos and other species? Well, Gecko Forums is the most extensive database of leopard gecko history on the web right now. Take a look and delve into the past, present, and future of this great community. The biggest contributors, breeders, and hobbyists have left their mark there. Now it's your turn. Look, learn, and post away. Need a place to post animals for sale? Look no further. Visit geckoforums.net and become a member today. Gecko Nation Radio is proud to be the official radio show associated with Gecko Forums.
Herpentime Radio is my inspiration for GNR. Justin and JD do a terrific show every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern, and have an amazing archive of shows available for download. Visit them at blogtalkradio.com/herpentime and on Facebook.
All right, folks, if you follow the leopard gecko community closely, you know, we see a lot of people coming and going. It actually seems like more people are coming. Now, we have hobbyists that stick with this for a year, 2 years, and some of them drop off and go off to do other things. Some of us stick with it and really, you know, really enjoy it and get really obsessed with it. That's the perfect word to describe it. Daryl Burton is a new hobbyist that has definitely caught the bug. And I could go on and tell you how great he is, but he's pretty cool. Let's go ahead and just bring him on. Mr. Daryl Burton, you are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey, Dave. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. It's nice to have you on in the aspect of an interview. You've co-hosted with me once or twice, I think, now. But this show is all for you. How do you feel about it?
Well, you know, it's quite an honor to do that. I don't know that I have the knowledge of some of your other guests that you've had on, but we'll have fun anyway.
Well, you know what? It's not always just about knowledge and experience. You know, it's basically just talking reptiles and just, you know, keeping it casual. We don't have to, you know, have a structured interview every episode, that's for sure. We've done a few of these beginner-type episodes, and they always go over really well. In fact, the downloads are comparable to some of our big interviews. So it really doesn't really matter in the long run, you know, the guest or the type of discussion. It's basically people love the show, so, you know.
Well, I think that just goes to show you how many new people that we're generating on a daily basis.
Right, right.
You got a lot of people out there that are new to the hobby and full of questions and looking for information. And, of course, you know, you can find good and bad information on the Internet. So this is probably a pretty good venue for them. I know it is for me.
Right. Absolutely. And you're a member and an admin in our group, Gecko Nation, now. And so you see firsthand exactly all the new people that are coming in and what people are talking about. What's your overall impression of the gecko world? And in addition to that, what made you decide to focus on leopard geckos?
Wow, that's a good question. Basically, I like all types of reptiles. You know, in the old days, like you mentioned earlier, I kept a lot of snakes and different things. And my current wife, or my wife, and we've been married for going on 14 years, and got Cade, who just turned 9, and she is dead set against snakes. So this was just kind of an easy fix. She looked at a leopard gecko and said, okay, you can get a few. Well, you know what happened? A few turned into a few, so a few more. So, you know, she let us have a pixie frog and, you know, different things like that, and tarantulas, you know. And so the leopard geckos was our first really strong push into the reptile side of it.
Hmm. Is there something special about leopard geckos that you really like that really caught your eye?
You know, back in the old days, we just had the wild types. I remember when they were importing those in the 80s, you know, and I mean, so to look at it and see all the different morphs and colors, and it just reminded me of the corn snake craze that hit in the 80s, you know, with Bill and Kathy Love started breeding corn snakes and, you know, all the different genetic makeups and different things you could make and, you know, so I saw the handwriting on the wall. I thought, man, you're right here in the middle of that again. And a friend of mine that's a big snake guy, you know, whenever I got out of the reptiles, I moved away from Fort Davis and to Midland, Texas. My father passed away in 93, so I came back home to help my mom get all that stuff straightened out. And I gave him probably 30 or 40 corn snakes, and I told him, I said, keep these corn snakes and keep breeding them. I said, this is going to be the candy in the pet stores in the future. And, of course, he did for a little while. And he was a rattlesnake guy to begin with. And so he kind of gave them away and did some different things. And then probably 10 or 12 years ago, he told me, he said, man, you were right. He said, I wished I'd have kept all those corn snakes. And, you know, he said, they're everywhere now. And you know, that's the leopard geckos are the same way.
Well, I'm hoping that the leopard geckos don't turn into, you know, $15, $30 animals like the corn snakes have. You know what I mean?
Well, and it's a numbers game. I mean, you know, in time you're going to see maybe not $15, $20, you know, but you're going to see some of the more common stuff, you know, the price come down. But they tend to hold their value a little better, it seems to me, unless you're just dealing in the pet trade animal, which most of the people that listen to this show and hang around in our group, that's not what they're doing. So there's always going to be a market. Like I've all, you know, you and I've talked many, many times. You know, if you produce good stuff, quality stuff, pretty stuff, it's always going to sell and bring top dollar. You know,
that's
it's whenever
true.
You
that's
start, you know, muddying the waters and you know, making things that aren't top quality, they're not going to bring the same money.
Yeah, no, that's the name of the game, exactly. You know, you've been, like, you're one of the people that understand it. So, I mean, just like you said, about the genetics and how important that is, and, you know, the top genetics and the top lines are always going to command the better pricing. Why don't you tell people you're not just a green hobbyist. Like, you have, why don't you give people a little idea of what your education is like? Because you've told me some of the studies that you've done and basically where your mind is at about, you know, the genetics and based on your education. Tell us a little bit about what kind of background you have, Darryl.
Yeah, I went to school at a little state college here in Texas called Saul Ross State University in Alpine, which is in the mountains, elevation 4,600 foot, very nice, you know, and you're only 90 miles north of Big Bend National Park, right in the middle of the Chihuahuan Desert. So, you know, that was what I went to school for, is biology and herpetology, you know, by education. And, you know, that's a problem that we have anytime. You know, I had a buddy of mine who's a PhD mammalogist and probably the smartest guy I know. You know, he's always told me that, you know, when you get hobbyists involved with science, it takes a curve, it takes a turn, you know. And a prime example is the way the leopard gecko community uses certain terms like dominant and codominant. You know, they use it, and everybody kind of understands it, but that is not what it's designed. You know, that's not what codominant means or dominant, the way that the gecko hobby uses it. But nonetheless,
right.
I mean, it's still what it is. And, I mean, there's more hobbyists have done more good for animals in general, because any time you've got somebody that is passionate and enjoys keeping something or breeding something, they're going to learn a whole lot more about the ins and outs of the animal, not only, you know, from herpetoculture or raising them and breeding them and what care they need way more than a scientist is. A scientist is only going to do things for a reason. And like I've told you in the past, you know, science is not here to prove anything. It only disproves. So,
right.
You know, I mean, at the end of the day, the hobbyists are great when it comes to the evolution of care for an animal or breeding of an animal. You know, they're going to do a whole lot more than a scientist is going to, in my opinion.
So, in particular,
hold
on, Daryl. I just want to mention, though, in particular, though, we have like the way we talk about these genes, it's almost like a genetic slang, so to speak, because you mentioned that we don't really have the terminology correct. So, for instance, just so you guys know, we'll take the Mac Super Snow, for example. Now, we call that a codominant, but in fact, it's actually an incomplete dominant, correct?
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And
I still don't know enough about the leopard gecko genetics. With me only being in it, you know, a little over a year in my first breeding season, you know, I still, you know, try to peruse the literature and learn as much as I can. But you can't learn anything until you start doing it. And
right.
You can put pen to paper and you know, you get these odds. You know, everybody's doing simple Mendelian genetics and the PNA squares, and they're trying to come up with the odds of getting different things, which is fine. I mean, but that's just odds. You know, for example, we could sit here and flip a quarter 10 times, you know, and they say you've got a 50-50 chance of it being heads or tails, but you could get either one to come up all 10 times. Probably not going to happen, but it could. And that's what people don't understand. Whenever you start incubating large numbers of eggs, you know, with all the odds that are out there, you're never going to see everything. The animal's not going to live long enough to produce enough eggs, you know, and you're just hoping that you can figure out to the best of your knowledge what's going on.
And that's always been my take with test breeding. I mean, I believe it's a valid endeavor to pursue, especially to do our best to clean up lines and just make sure our lines are so, you know, pure in quotation marks. But at the end of the day, like, you know, how do you know the test animals are pure? How do you know?
That's where I was fixing to go with that. That's all fine and dandy, and you have to test breed, and I understand that. But unless you know for a fact, and you're not going to, that your test animals are pure, I mean, you're going to the best of your knowledge. And that's all you can do, you know, but you never know for sure, in my opinion.
It's actually like, yeah, it's almost like chaos theory in a way. It's like, you know, you can only it's interesting to talk about. That's your source. Well, speaking of the genetics, you've definitely you're on your way to building a very, very impressive leopard gecko collection. Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the projects you're working with so far, Daryl?
Oh, I've got several things going here, and you know, my deal whenever I started gathering up a few animals. My whole thing was, you know, when I got started, I wanted to get good quality stuff, in which I think I have for the most part. I've got a couple here that may not be. But my whole deal was I was going to get animals that I could breed. For example, you know, I've got bandits. And that may be my favorite of all are the bandits. You know, and I got them straight from Ron. You know, I went and picked them out at his facility, and if everybody ever has a chance to go there, it is just awesome to go in and see all the stuff that he's got going on. But, you know, so I picked up those and the first time, and then he kind of guided me, you know, kind of like a horse to water. He showed me the pastel raptors that he had and convinced me. It didn't take much convincing because they're real nice animals, you know, to get those, and I did. And so now I'm real curious with all this stuff that he's got going on with those, and maybe he can figure that out. You know, and the extreme emmerines I picked up from Ron, and then, as you know, I picked up quite a few animals. Everybody here that listens to this show and is on the webpage knows I picked up quite a few animals from you. And, you know, I've gone...
Thank you, by the way.
...with straight and simple stuff, you know. I mean, I want to be able to breed something that I know... that you know, you guys, the big breeders, have worked on and perfected certain things, and so I want to breed that. So whenever I hatch it, I know what it is for the most part, and, you know, I can see, okay, this, you know, because until this year, until I started hatching eggs, I didn't know what baby straight out of the egg looked like for, you know, an extreme emmerine or a bandit or, you know, pick it, any of them, you know. I mean, I saw some at Ron's that were pretty young, but I didn't know what all of them were, you know.
Right.
And then the other thing, though, with me is you know, in which you know, I really, really like the wild types, the pure subspecies stuff. And, of course, I've picked up quite a few things from John. And breaking news here on GNR, I just picked up a pair of Ilium Providence Agamanii from John last week. So I can't wait to get those
That's
guys
awesome.
Here. Now I have two pair. But, you know, I got the others.
And, for people that don't know that are listening, we're talking about John Scarborough from Gecko Boa Reptiles. He is basically the wild type king here in America. He's got all the different available subspecies right now, which is pretty cool. So check him out. He's a sponsor of the show, so check him out. But
and a super nice guy too.
Oh yeah, he's awesome. What's the difference?
The aliens are a little lighter colored.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little lighter colored, I think, as adults. I think the pair that I got, he just posted them on his webpage. If anybody's looked at it, they're the first two animals that he posted up, I think, last week. He sent me an email wanting to know if I was interested in them, and, you know, how could I say no?
That's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, and they're just – the Kermanshaw province that I have right now, they're just different. I mean, until you sit here and look at them side by side with regular leopard geckos, I mean, the morphology, the idiosyncrasies, the habits, they're totally different. I mean, they're still a leopard gecko, yes, but they're totally different.
And they're
just
huge,
that
right?
Different. Yeah, my female that I picked up a few months ago is. She's pushing about 8 or 9 months now. I think she was hatched last August. And she's 78 grams right now. And the thing you got to realize about these guys is they're long and lean. I mean, their legs are, you know, a good 2 inches. Whenever they stand up off the ground, they stand up. You know, and so they're real long and lean. The head's real big and pointy. They're just totally different. Morphologically speaking, anyway, to me, I'm sure John could give everybody a better description, but they're really neat. I mean, I really, really like them. They remind me a lot, and I don't quote me on this, but they remind me a lot of the Montanas. I think Montanas are probably closely related to them. I think John was telling me they're like one mountain range over in their natural habitat where they come from. The Montanas aren't as big, obviously, but they do have, Montanas does have that lanky look to them as well, just not as big as these guys.
And I'm kind of like the opposite. I can appreciate the wild types, but I just really love the morphs. That's like my whole thing. But I can totally appreciate why anybody would be interested in the wild types. I mean, if I had to get involved with the wild types heavily, I would go for the Agamanius too, just because they're so different. Yeah, I have a few of the. I really like the Ephasiolatus myself. Afghans are cool, but if you had to take a pick, Daryl, which is your favorite of the wild types?
Favorite of the wild types has got to be the Agamanius.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, because I've got several. I've got the Macularis, which I'm incubating eggs on those. You know, that was the original ones that first started coming in. And, you know, I've got Montanus, Turkmenicus. You know, I've got two different lines from John on those. They're pretty neat. I like them as well. I've got to get the Ephasios. I want some of those. And I'll eventually try to pick them all up. And I guess that just goes back to the old schooling. You know, I mean, when we first started catching snakes and – collecting snakes, you didn't know anything about breeding them. You were just trying to keep them alive, and you know. And
yes.
Then when we did start breeding them, I mean, you know, we used to, you know, whenever I was catching alternas, gray banded king snakes, you know, I mean, I used to hunt in the summers between 1981 to about 88. You know, I would hunt 100, 120 nights a year. You know, I mean, nearly
wow.
every night. You know, and you know, the gray bands aren't hard to, they're not easy to find. But you know, we got to where we would only breed them if we caught them at the same locale. You know, within you know a quarter of a mile of each other. If not, we wouldn't breed them. I mean, that's just you know we're trying to keep the genetics pure. And you know, today that's not the case. I mean, they'll breed them with anything and everything. And once you start, you know, collecting animals of any species, it doesn't matter, and start looking at the different localities and the differences, the little idiosyncrasies and, you know, the subtle differences, I mean, they're there. You know, to the common layperson, that you know, an alterna, whenever you're collecting them for several years like that, you can look at one and come within pretty close to telling somebody where it came from, you know.
Yeah,
but
well, that's the interesting part about it, and you're right.
Sure.
People have been mixing stuff up, and I think that's what the popularity is today with the wild type leopard geckos. I mean, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think it's more the wild type. You know, some people are going to be like you. They're going to look at them and say, "Oh, yeah, okay, that's cool. It's big, but you know, where's the orange, or you know, where's the pattern?" You know, I mean, they're looking for the. The cool morphs that they're seeing online, and I can appreciate that as well, you know. But I think in the future you're going to see, we've discussed this before on the phone on some of our, you know, late night druid worship where we've set up and talked till the wee hours of the morning. I think you're going to see in time a lot of things revert back to instead of having. You know, five different combo morphs in one animal, you're going to see it revert back to one, maybe two, and people are really, really, really going to specialize on that and make it the best it can be. I mean, you know, they've done it with the sun glows. You know, there's two or three different lines of sun glows out there and tangs, and, you know, I mean, you can see where people start line breeding that stuff and making it really, really good and loud colors, and you know, I mean, and I think that's what you're going to see across the board for everything. Right now, it's oh wow, how many genes can I put in there, or how many different, you know, different genetic combos can I put together, and what's it going to look like? We're still at that stage right now. What's it going to look like? And
yeah, right.
I think once everybody starts seeing, okay, this is what it's going to look like, and they're going to pick their own, you know. Whatever it may be, if it's a, you know, an orange gecko, a yellow gecko, a purple gecko, green gecko, whatever, they're really mm-hmm. going to start mainstream line breeding and come up with some really, really neat stuff. And it's going to be, you know, it's just like, you know, right now, you know, Ron's got the bandits, you know, and Marcia's got, the sun glows, you know, and look at the stuff that John's doing with his tangerines. I mean, they're amazing, you know, and you got people doing different things with the rainwaters, you know, with the fire waters and all that good stuff. I mean, everybody's going to find their little, what they like, what they enjoy looking at, you know, because at the end of the day, if it's what you enjoy that makes you work harder for a common good, you know, you're trying to make something that you like, and hopefully everybody else will too. But at the end of the day, if it looks good, everybody's going to like it, no matter what it is, you know.
Oh yeah, now that's true. And if it's beautiful, it'll sell too. That's the other thing. People will want to add it to their collection. You know, you've got quite a bunch of projects though. Like you're trying to cover all the bases. Which I think is really cool.
Well, you know, not really. I mean, if you really look at it, I'm pretty narrow. I mean, I've got a lot of trimper stuff because that was the first place I looked, you might say. And then, you know, I've picked up some other things. But I have one rainwater animal in my collection. I just got it from Steve.
Oh,
That's it. I don't have any rainwater stuff at all.
But for your first year, they're very little bell.
I mean,
diverse.
Yeah, I've got a few different bell stuff, you know, that I picked up here and there, you know, but I really don't have a wide variety of the bell stuff either. I've got, you know, I picked up, you know, the nice lavender Jim Snow bell from John, and then turned around and got the white and yellow male from him that is just, I need to post pictures of him. He is stunning. Yeah,
he's stunning. Yeah.
I mean, it was funny. I picked it up when it was pretty young, and John held on to it for, oh, I don't know, 2 or 3 months before he shipped it. And I remember one day he said, "You about ready for this stuff?" Because I had Turkmenicus coming and a few other things, you know, Montana. So, I mean, he was sitting on several animals. And I said, "Yeah." And he sent me a picture. He said, "I don't know why I sold this animal to you." He said, "Look at this." And, I mean, it is just incredible.
I know. The female is beautiful. The Jim Snow female
is
so pretty. He glows.
You know, and that was another one. He was going to, that was a holdback, but it turned out to be female and not male, so he put it up for sale. And I remember talking to you and telling you, "Hey, if you looked at this animal, you know, I'm thinking about getting it." It was just really, really nice.
Now, what did I tell you?
Oh, I have it. Yeah, you told me snag it. You know, and then you always, your caveat at the end of that, yeah, go ahead and get it, but, you know, I would get anything or everything, so don't listen to me. I think that's what you always tell me.
Well, that's my, yes, that is my just my little default disclaimer. I am a total enabler for anybody that has an addiction with geckos or reptiles. So, yeah, you know, it's like I'm pretty much a pusher, so to speak.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm definitely.
Well,
I'm definitely,
you know, and that, you know, that's the thing you were asking me earlier. You know, why leopard geckos? And man, if you know, and the main reason is for me is, like I say, I'm trying to use this as a, you know, while I enjoy keeping them and doing all that as well, I'm really using it to educate Cade on genetics. And you know, when you have something that is prolific as these guys are, it's easy to, you know, in a short period of time, you know, say, okay, this is what you've got, this is what you got, okay, what is this, you know, and try to explain to him, you know, in simple terms what's going on. And you know, whenever you're breeding, you know, pythons or boas or, you know, snakes in general, you know, you could be waiting to grow a snake up for 2 or 3 years before you get to breed it, you know, and heck, you can breed a leopard gecko in a year. Now, I don't believe the Agamanians, you know, John is saying 2 years, so, you know, they're a little different, so.
I bet you they'll be, I guess, they say 2 years, but I'm thinking that once they become acclimated, I'm betting that you guys might be able to cut that time down a little bit. That's just my gut feeling on it.
You know, I'm watching them, and you know, maybe. I think it's going to be at least 18 months. My female was born in August, and I think it'll be next January, February before she goes.
Really?
I really do.
I'm wondering.
Of course, you know,
like
in nature, I'm thinking the wild types that we're dealing with, I mean, macularis, montanus, turkmenicus, any of them, fascios, they're probably 2 years in the wild. We're growing stuff in captivity a whole lot faster than it's going to grow in the wild.
Yeah, oh, that's true. Yeah, well, that's the other thing. That's my point, though. If you, you know, once we start, you know, having a lot more captive generations and, you know, it's more or less not domestic. Well, I guess you can call it domesticating, where we're starting to domesticate them and they become, you know, I'm thinking that in time, you know, things will change. You may not need the 2 years. But then again, you know, I don't know. I'm not working. It's just a feeling.
You're probably right. I mean, I feel like, and, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, the animals that, you know, with all the different morphs and stuff that people have been working with, you know, I mean, you know, basically what we're looking at 10 years since all this has really kicked in and taken off. And you know, we have domesticated these guys in a rapid rate because they are so prolific and you can do things so fast. And you know, just you take any of the wild types, and you know you try to handle them like you do, you know, your sun glow or whatever, and they don't act the same. You know, they're a little more skittish. They're you know, I mean, I can come in and turn the light on, and boy, all those wild types, boom, they just hit it, you know, heading for their hide. Whereas, you know, all this other stuff's looking at me saying, "Hey, you gonna throw some worms in here?" You know, and so and you're probably right. You know, a few years down the road, get them in captivity. You get a few captive bred generations under everybody's belt. They're probably gonna change.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Yeah, and I'm wondering how the appearance will look. I'm wondering if just being in captivity will start changing their appearance somewhat, you know?
Well,
it's amazing.
Exactly. It is going to. I mean, you know, I try to, and I, like I say, I'm weird, I guess, you know, but I try to keep everything as pure as I can keep it on the wild stuff. You know, I haven't crossed anything into it or I hadn't crossed them into anything that I've got because, like I say, I'm keeping everything. In other words, if I got it from you, I'm breeding your stuff. If I got it from John, I'm breeding John's stuff. If I got it from Ron, I'm breeding Ron's stuff. That way I get a feel of what is going on there that you guys have been working on for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now in time I'm gonna spread out and, you know, try to figure something out on my own and maybe play with something. But back to your question, I think you're right. I think a lot of the stuff, these wild imports that are coming in, for lack of a better term, you know, that everybody's getting, you know, once again, who knows? You know, there may be a gene in there that somebody's going to find, you know. I mean, you know, the Holy Grail, everybody's still looking for, you know, a pure melanistic gecko, and it's going to happen, you know. And I think when you start bringing in wild blood, you know, and introduce, you know, you don't know what you're getting. I mean, you know, look, we got three different albinos that probably all came from pretty narrow gene pool in the day, you know, and I mean, they're all different. But
well, I hope we don't
who
get
knows
another albino strain.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
That was just
tough enough.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, I mean, just imagine all the drama and everything that'll incur with something like that. I mean, oh, my God. You know, everything is just starting to kind of calm down out there from what I can tell. And if all we need is something like that just to stir the pot up again, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
well, you know, here's the other thing. I mean, back in the 80s when everybody, you know, first started really trying to breed stuff, you know, it was a very narrow window. I mean, you could only get animals at a few places. You know, there was no internet. You know, there were no, I mean, you had to get a price list. You know, I mean, you either got a price list, you know, there were two or three big guys around, and you would look at their price list every month. You know, now look at it. I mean, you know, you can go anywhere and find, you know, captive bred reptiles.
Yep.
Look at all the different shows that are scattered around. I can remember in the old days, you know, giving my age here, but I went to the first Snake Breeders Expo in Orlando in 1987, the first one. You know, and that was a big deal back then. You know, I mean, I flew out to Florida and went and saw that, and I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, look at all this stuff. I mean, I was looking at things that, you know, I'd only read about or seen pictures of, you know, and I mean, that, you know, there were no leopard geckos that I can even remember at that one, you know. I mean, I don't remember, you know, it was all mostly snakes, but, you know, and other things. But, I mean, you know, look now, there's snake shows everywhere every weekend, or reptile shows. You
pretty
know,
much,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, and back, and that's great. I mean, that's good because, you know, I mean, we didn't have PetSmarts back then or any of that stuff either. You know, you had a local pet store that might every once in a while have a snake or a box turtle in there or something like that, you know. Never did you see, you know, all the amphibians and stuff that you see today. Tarantulas, oh, you got to be kidding me. There were no spiders being kept back in those days that I know of. You know, I'm sure there were people that were doing it, but look how widespread it is now. There may be more people keeping tarantulas than than there are leopard geckos.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that. My friend Anastasia from NetBug, you know, we've been with each other at a few of the shows, Hamburg and New York and White Plains, and her table, you can't even get near it. I mean, I never would have expected tarantulas to be that popular, but she brings with her, I don't know, several hundred or maybe even 1,000 for each show, and they're all little slings. They're little babies, baby spiders,
right,
and little vials, whatever those little containers are. And you can't get near her table, Daryl. You can't get anywhere near it.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, the thing about spiders is, you know, they're intriguing. Most people are afraid of them to begin with, you know.
Right.
And I kind of, I wasn't a big spider guy. You know, I thought they were neat. There's a lot of neat colors, you know, and different things like that. But that's the thing. I mean, you can go buy, you know, a sling from her, you know, I mean, depending on what it is. But something common, you can get it for $10 or $12, you know.
Yeah, but she's got a lot of the rare.
You know, if you want to get, yeah, she's got a lot of the rare stuff. You're right. I mean, you can, you know, the sky's the limit. You can spend whatever you want, you know. And they're, you know, the thing about spiders is they're pretty durable. I mean, you know, I mean, they don't, you know, I mean, once they get, you know, the slings are kind of tough. If you let them, you know, if you don't keep them moist, they'll desiccate and die. But, you know, they feed relatively easy. You know, you just, they don't take a whole lot of attention. They're not a, you know, some people do handle them, but they're not a big touchy-feely critter, you know. I mean, they're more of look at, you know, don't touch. But you can handle them, but, you know, the man, the irritating hairs are tough. You talk about itch. You think you itch with mealworms. You get some of those spiders that are hair kickers, and, man, they just, you know, the nandus and stuff like that, they'll just tear you up. You swear you
That's
stuck
funny.
Your hand in a fire ant bed. But, you know, I mean, but, yeah, so I think that's the deal. You know, they don't take up a whole lot of space. They don't take a whole lot of care. I mean, if you know what you're doing, you know, I mean, they're pretty durable. I mean, you know, I hate to say this, but I had a baby sling that I'd had for a year or two, and had put it on a shelf in the back, and I forgot about the thing for like 6 months. You
oh my
know,
God.
And one day, you know, it was back behind another cage, and it was a little bitty vial like you're talking about. And I pulled out, and I thought, oh, this thing's going to be dead. Shoot, no, it had shed. It was in there just fine. You know, gave it a little bit of water and, you know, threw a piece of mealworm in there, and it was just happy as it had good sense. You know, and I mean, 6 months with nothing.
That's interesting. Well, but, you know, that's like a perfect low-maintenance pet. And they don't bite.
Yes, it is.
If you're not tormenting them or being rough with them, they don't bite you. They are very, very calm spiders. They just walk all over you and stuff, right? I mean, that's pretty much what I've seen.
Yeah, they're, you know, I mean, there's certain ones that are a little more jumpy than others, but, you know, most of the New World stuff, you know, like things we have around here in New Mexico and down in the tropics, you know, most of those are pretty docile terrestrial stuff. Now, when you start talking Old World and you get into the baboons and things like that, they get a little more, you know, bite your face off mentality.
I'll stick with my leopard geckos, I think, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, me too.
All right, folks, listen, we're coming up at the halfway point here, and we do have some callers already lined up in the queue. We're going to take a quick break, and in the second half of the show, guys, I want you guys to call in with your comments, questions, whatever you want, all right? Daryl and I are going to have this be a very casual episode. Guys, just want to talk about anything in particular. There's no topic that you need to stick with, whatever you guys want, all right? And, of course, we're going to do our raffle for callers. I haven't figured out what it's going to be. Anything you want to give Daryl? If you don't have anything, I'll give it Gecko tonight. We'll see. So, what do you got? What do you think?
Hey, I may do that. Why don't I do that? I need to practice on shipping one of these things anyway. I don't know
okay.
what. You know what I mean?
You have a,
I don't mind doing
that. Yeah, that's
that.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. You don't have to figure out what
yeah.
kind or anything tonight. So just keep it keep it in mind. All right, folks. So there you have it. We're gonna give a gecko out tonight for the raffle. So second half of the show, right after the break, The number is 646-478-5331. Call in with something cool, and we'll be right back, folks. Hang tight.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David's Fine Geckos creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. Gecko Nation Radio is sponsored by...
Ohio Gecko is famous for amazing tangerines, snows, and other very unique leopard gecko projects. Thad also has some incredible fat tail morphs available from stingers to starbursts. Visit him online at ohiogecko.com and at expos in the Northeast. He is also the owner of geckoforums.net.
Dale's Bearded Dragons is your one-stop source for any reptile supply products that you may need, from Exoterra, Zoomed, Rapashi, Repcal, Fluker, and much, much more, and all at 20 to 50% cheaper than your local pet store or big chain pet store. They are also the biggest reptile supply distributor at most of the Northeast expos. Contact them directly online at dalesbeardeddragons.com or message me on Facebook and I'll put you in touch with the owner.
Supreme Gecko is a great source for crested geckos, day geckos, and other species, including micro geckos. Wally Kern is a top-notch breeder and gecko enthusiast. Visit supremegecko.com for his available animals and supplies.
Gecko Boa Reptiles is your source for the highest quality leopard gecko morphs and wild types, from white and yellows to radars, amazing tremper morphs, and rare subspecies. John is a world-class breeder and extremely knowledgeable. If you're looking for something truly special in geckos, contact John Scarborough at geckoboa.com and on Facebook.
Rainbow Mealworms is the largest worm grower in the world and selling to the public since 1956. If you need the highest quality mealworms, superworms, and crickets for your pets, contact them at www.rainbowmealworms.net.
All right, folks, and I just want to remind you all that there is still the ongoing coupon code with abdragons.com. You're going to get 5% off your Duvia roaches and your FlexWatt heat tape. The code is GECKO, all in caps. All right, so check out our sponsor, abdragons.com. I just want to remind everybody we have one more sponsorship spot available. And contact me at geckonationradio@gmail.com. But Daryl, you expressed some interest in possibly grabbing a sponsorship spot, but you haven't come up with a name for your operation yet. What's going on?
Yeah, that's I was just sitting here thinking of that while I was on mute, and you brought all that up. We've got an hour left in the show, right?
Yeah.
Let's see what our folks can muster up. We've got some very bright and intelligent people there, quite a few in the chat room. Guys, I'm looking for something. I've got to have a name. You know, I said I wasn't going to do this, and Dave kept telling me, yeah, right, you're going to have to. You can't keep everything. And so it has come down to that. And I hope Chris Grubb is listening because he said he was going to. A local Texas guy here in Dallas, he stole my name. He came. I was going to do Lone Star Gecko, and Chris beat me to it. So I thought I'd arm wrestle him for it, but I got to looking at his pictures of his wedding. He looks like a pretty big guy, so I don't think I could win that one either. So I think he's a weightlifter as well. So anyway, maybe if he let me use both hands and both feet, maybe I might could do it. But anyway, guys, think about it. I really like the Texas side of it. Being in the
something
big state
Texas
of Texas.
Themed.
Yeah, something Texas themed, but I'm open for anything. You know, I've been kicking it around you think of a lot of things and me and you've talked about it, you know, and I like the idea of maybe getting away from just the gecko side of it and going exotics or something like that, because there will be other animals in the future, I hope.
You're not done yet.
You know, if I can convince my wife, you know, snakes is my true love, and Cade wants a pied ball python so bad he can't see straight. He held one at Ron's last time we was there, and I thought he was going to try to carry it home with him, but I took him. Here's another thing, Dave, you know this. I went to Fort Davis last weekend, went to visit the in-laws in Alpine, and took Cade snake hunting for the first time in his life. We went snake hunting two nights in a row, and the first thing we run across is a black. Oh yeah, first thing we run across is a black neck garter, and a buddy of mine, Buzz Ross, who's a dear friend and is in the hospital because he got snake bit Wednesday night by an Arizona black.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's about the fourth time. So,
oh my God.
But anyway, not by an Arizona black, but he's been bit several times. Anyway. He was with us. He jumps out and he picks this snake. Well, Cade wanted to bring it home, and I said, no, we're not taking a garter snake home. So, but anyway, we had fun, and it was his first time. You know, by about midnight, he pooped out and was asleep. But he had a big time. So we did it two nights. Rained. I mean, we need the rain. I can't bitch about that. But you know, I mean, there are some places in the Permian Basin here got 10 inches of rain over the weekend. We got like 2.5 here in Midland. And about 2 inches up in the mountains, but and we need it. I mean, we're still behind, but yeah. So it was fun, and yeah, the people in the Gecko Nation, think about that. See if y'all can help me come up with a name for the old.
Well, we have. I think we're going to have some good suggestions. We have about I don't know, a bunch of people lining up. I don't know how many callers. Let's see. I'm going to start taking calls. We'll take the one that's been on the longest, and I think I know who this is. I kind of recognize the phone number. Caller from the 440 area code, you're live on Gecko Nation Radio. Is this Rob?
Hello.
440. How's it going?
Good.
You're on the air.
Yeah. I was actually just listening.
Well, you got to come up with something to say now.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. You need the name. I was actually just listening and watching a Matt's auction.
What do you think? What should we call his operation?
I have no idea. I'm not good at coming making up creative things.
Me either.
All right. Well,
Rob, don't worry.
Okay.
I'm not either.
All right. We'll figure it out, Rob. Go watch Matt's auction. Hope you win. I'll pick the next call. Caller from the 253, we know this is Elsa. Elsa, you're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Yeah, hi guys, how you doing?
Good.
Great, Elsa, how are you?
I have an observation. I did geckos quite a few years ago first, only tokays, but they were, looking back, they were all wild caught. They all came from the same, you know, bad place. And I finally gave up on it because I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know where to go for help. There wasn't anything back then.
Right.
And I really liked them, though. And so a few years ago, when I noticed all of the information out there on the Internet, I started to take notice again. And I couldn't help myself. Last year, after trying to do a lot of research on my own, I finally started getting back into geckos. And my observation is this. The herp community is really, really out to help everybody else. The information is there. They really want to help. They really want to get other people going and started. The encouragement is there. And it just gives me the courage to, to just go on to, I know I can do this since everybody else is out there doing it and helping me and giving me encouragement, and all this information is out there in the form of, everything out there. I mean, it's just, do you feel that too, Daryl? Do you feel the embrace of the community?
Absolutely, Elsa, like you're saying, you just struck a nerve with me. The first gecko I ever had was in 1979, and my high school biology teacher gave me a tokay gecko that he had imported. He imported a bunch of them, and you're right, they were beautiful, and of course they were meaner than a junkyard dog too, but that was it. Luckily for me, he knew how to take care of them, so I had somebody that I could glean off of. But other than that, if you didn't know somebody in the old days, you read every book in the library, if you didn't know somebody that had some experience, or could point you into somebody that, that knew how to do it. You were just on your own, and it was trial and error, and you know, and I mean, believe you me, we were doing a lot of things wrong back in the old days, for sure.
Right.
But yeah, I believe that with the internet, there's a lot of valuable information out there. There's some that's probably not as valuable, but you know, most people are very, very, very helpful, and you know, everybody is out for the common good of the animals, I think. And you know, I mean, there's always going to be a few bad apples around, and you just have to weed those out. But you're right, for the most part, lots of encouragement, and lots of help out there.
Right.
All right.
Okay,
thanks for calling in, Elsa.
Bye.
Thanks, Elsa.
All right. Yeah, I forgot about that, Dave. Okay,
yeah,
get after it. I'm sitting here.
And don't forget, before the end of the show, I want you to tell us that story about that teacher in school, which is very interesting.
Yeah, just let me know. It's kind of I'll try to keep it short, but that is a good one. Yeah.
All right, let's see. Who's been on the longest here? All right, caller from the 803 area code. You're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey, Dave, this is Dylan.
What's up, Dylan? How are you, bud?
Hi, Dylan.
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you? Hey, Daryl. I have a question.
Hey.
My friend in the UK, he said that there's a rumor that there's a new hypogene going around, and they think it's codominant. And I was just wondering, have you guys heard about it, and what are your thoughts on it?
I have not heard about a new hypogene. Does it look anything? Have you seen it yet, Dylan?
I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to see it soon. He's going to show me some pictures. But I'll definitely tell you what I think of it when I see it.
Is this like
that wouldn't surprise me. I'm sorry, Dave.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, was this discovered by someone well known, or is it just
my friend said that the guy that it has it at this time is a really well known breeder in the UK. It's kind of under wraps, so I can't say any names, but
okay.
Yeah, there's always going to be stuff like that crop up. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. You're going to see all kinds of. In my opinion, we're just, you know, it's like an iceberg. We're only looking at the tip of it so far, and you're going to see a lot of things in the future.
Mm-hmm.
That we are not seeing today, and most of those, you know, here's the thing. Dave and I have talked about this before. There's probably been things that have been hatched out already that whoever hatched it was like me and a newcomer and didn't even realize what it was, and it wasn't any big deal, and it probably got given away, sold to a pet store, and died in somebody's collection that didn't know what the heck they were doing. I mean, there's no telling how many things like that have already happened that we don't even know about. So.
Yeah.
Hypogene's a little touchy, though. I mean, maybe. I mean, you know, I'd like to see a picture of it.
Yeah, about more than half of the people that have asked about it think it's total BS. But I mean, you don't really ever know until you prove it out and really know the gene. You know what I mean?
I was talking with just to give you a correlation, Dylan. I was talking with Matt the other day, and we were talking about the different snow lines and. You know, because, you know, the tug, the gem, are both dominant, you know, if anybody could just, you know, take a gem snow, right, and say it popped out of their collection and say, oh, I found a new snow line. And, you know what I mean?
Pull
a different snow. I mean,
true.
Right. I mean, if you breed a gem to this so-called new snow line, you know, of course, you're not going to get any supers. So it's kind of like that, too. Like, what if we have to trust people, too. We have to try to take people at their word. But, you know, these things need to be investigated as thoroughly as we can, and we got to go on the merit of the person that's bringing it to the community. And, you know, some people have better reputations than others, and it's, you know, we'll see. I mean, I'm actually optimistic. I'm hoping. I'd love to get another gene to work with. We need more genes, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we have a million now, but yeah, I think we could always use more. Except for no more albinos. I don't want any more albinos.
Yeah.
No.
Unless they're like
true albino would be nice.
Oh
well,
fantastic.
Real leucistic. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, real leucistic. You know. a real leucistic, a real albino. I mean,
yeah.
You know. Still,
cool.
I'm telling
oh,
you, the Holy
and,
Grail. The Holy Grail is the melanistic.
Oh yeah, that'd be pretty sweet.
Hey Dylan, why don't you make?
Because when that crops up,
you,
boy, that's going to change
say
everything.
What?
I was saying, Dylan, why don't you make this your job to follow up on this gene and keep us posted in the group and.
Absolutely.
You know
I will.
Yeah, let us
and
come up
also, Daryl, a name that I came up with for you was
yes,
Lone Star Leos.
Dave came up with that one earlier.
I didn't even know. That was the first thing that came to mind.
Well, nobody knew that. He told me that way. It's probably been a month ago, huh, Dave?
Yeah,
something like
that. About
that.
There you go. That's confirmation.
Yeah, but, yeah, you know, and I like it as well, but you know, then Dave, he throws a monkey wrench in everything, you know, and he says, you know, do you really want to get tied to the gecko side of it or the leopard gecko? He said, you know, you really got to cover all the bases. So, you know, my son's big push in life is he wants to have a pet store and he wants to call it Reptiles Universe. Now, I don't know if that's ever been done or whatever, but that's really what he wants to call it. But so
everybody has.
I don't know. Exactly. Well, his dream is this. You know, he says, I said, well, you got to learn how to breed animals. You got to learn how to take care of animals. You got, you know, all this, that, and the other, clean cages. Nah, Dad, you can do that. I'll just work the register.
Smart guy.
You got to put in work.
Oh, he's pretty good.
Cool. All right, Dylan. Well,
thanks, Dylan. I will take that under advisement.
All right. All right, thank you, guys.
All right, later, bud. All right, let's see. Who's been on? Wow, we got a lot of callers tonight. All right, caller from the 508 area code. You're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hi, Dave, Daryl. This is Rachel.
Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Rachel.
Doing well. I've been enjoying the show so far.
Awesome.
And I have to say,
well, great. I hope we
hadn't
been boring you.
Oh, no, what you were saying about the getting back to more of the pure gene lines and stuff, I'm really feeling that. You know, I've been looking at maybe breeding in a few years, and I've been looking at geckos, and it's really difficult to kind of find things without the hat, especially Eclipse. It's like everybody loves Eclipse
exactly.
Except me. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Not like my vision.
I think you're smart. I think you're smart doing that.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be quite a mission, though, to get, like, the pure geckos to start working with, because definitely people are into mixing all the traits they can right now.
Well, you're going to have to go to the bigger guys. They'll always have a few things that are cleaner. You know, you take the just hobbyist, for lack of a better term, somebody that's breeding 15, 20, 30 geckos, they're probably are mixing a bunch of stuff up. But these bigger guys are smarter than that. They'll keep a few things clean. Now, whether or not they'll let you have any is the next question, but most
yeah,
of them will have
the
a
trick,
few
huh?
of those. Mm-hmm.
All right,
but if you
so
twist their arm
question.
Long enough and you keep – yes, go ahead.
All right, so this kind of stems from a discussion that was going on Gecko Forums a little while ago. You know, we started a debate going about breeding pet store Leos, which I don't really want to get into, but towards the end of the thread we were talking about how – you know, breeders have gotten bitten by kind of having, you know, hidden hets and things. And so I was, like, surprised that people don't really do, like, lineages and family trees for geckos. I mean, you think you'd want to show, for example, if you've been breeding something for, like, three generations, you'd want to kind of show that off. So, I mean, what do you think about that? Do breeders, you know, habitually provide stuff like that? Do buyers ask for it, you know, or is it something we should be doing?
That's a great question.
Well, here's my take on it. Yeah, that is great. And I'll let Dave. Dave can probably do it. Rachel, for me, I will do that. I will keep very detailed records on that for that general purpose. But I think it all boils down to, like you did, the last part of your question was, do people ask for that? And I would say 9 times out of 10, no. You know, unless you're a serious... And most people don't realize the ins and outs of genetics anyway, and so they don't know that they need to know that, for lack of a better term. So, you know, for somebody like me, yeah, I'm going to ask a few questions, maybe not always the right ones. You know, I'm learning more about it as I go, but But, yes, I think guys like Dave, Dave can probably answer, but I think the big guys do keep records on the lineage. Now, whether or not they tell you, I mean, if you ask them, they will. I mean, I've never had any – Ron, John, Dave, I've never had any of them say when I ask them, you know, what do we got going on here, and they've all told me, you know, well, this is this and this is that, and, you know, mama was this and blah, 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 blah. So they know. Now, most people don't ask that question. That's my opinion. What say you, Dave?
I'll add to it. Asking the right questions is key, especially when you're starting out, because if you don't ask the right questions, you're not going to get – basically what it is unless you're – I'm trying – let me see how to do this politically correct. All right, well, I'll give you my experience. When I first started out, okay, I didn't ask the right questions. So there was information I just didn't get. And, you know, I kind of was treated as a newbie and definitely taken advantage of because I just didn't know better and I didn't know the right questions to ask. And I was sold animals that weren't in the best of health and weren't, you know, genetically, you know, what they were being sold as. And because I just didn't ask the right questions. And people out there, sellers that will gauge your intelligence by the questions you ask. And it's a dead giveaway what level you're at by the type of questions you're asking. So that being said, it's kind of like going into a car dealership without having any experience on how to deal with a car dealer, a car salesman. You always want to bring somebody that knows how to talk to a car salesman with you so you can get the best deal. It's kind of just like that. Now, as far as keeping records, okay, now that's a very important thing to do. Now, as your collection grows into the hundreds and thousands of geckos, it becomes increasingly more difficult to do that. Now, I'm at the point where I have hundreds, and for me, so I have good records of, I know where all my lines came from. Every single one of my geckos that has produced anything, and, you know, they've been producing multiple generations now. So even one female that I got 4 years ago, there's, I don't know, 30, 50 descendants, some of them have now. So I can stem everything back to certain animals and where those animals came from, which breeders I got them from. That is so important if you're going to be doing this seriously and if you want to be taken seriously. Because if you can't go back, I mean, in the future, a lot of these genes are going to, I think they're going to be scrutinized even more because people are going to really want to know. So if you can't go back and say, all right, well, the original lineage of this came from David's Fine Geckos or Gecko Boa Reptiles or Tremper, for instance, whatever, you know, you're going to have less of a chance at selling them to people, you know, serious hobbyists. Because the people that are going to be serious about it, those are the people that are going to have the money that are going to want to buy the higher-end animals. So, and those are the kind of customers you want. Unless you want to produce pet-only geckos, that's your thing. But if you're looking to do this seriously, yes, you need to keep accurate records. And I'll be honest with you, I'm at the point right now where my collection is very big, and I'm actually trying to figure out ways to keep my records and keep them easily. But like I said, I'm still discovering it myself, how to do it properly with such a large collection. But it is very important, Rachel.
Yeah, I mean, it seems sometimes the way people label things, they almost forget after a generation, you know, what about the hets? It's kind of like you see 33%, 66%, 50%, and then, you know, they just let it fall off. And that's where I think the lineage really would be better, and I'm glad to know that at least some people are keeping it, you know?
Yes. Well,
Rachel, it goes back to what I was talking about earlier. Whenever you see these percentages, that's just it as a percentage. It's just possible het. Until you prove it to the best of your ability, you're not going to know for sure. And you may still, you know, that's the thing. You take a female that can produce, let's say, you know, 8 or 10 or 12 eggs in a season, and you can hatch all those eggs out, and you're still not going to know for sure. You've got a pretty good idea. You've got a hunch, but you still don't know for sure, especially whenever you start dealing with several different genes in there.
Yeah, that's what worries me. I worry people are kind of like, you know, forgetting that they can't really prove something's not het after, you know, 1 year of breeding and kind of selling it, you know, as het-free.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Well,
all right, well,
I would never,
that,
I would never, yeah, Thank you.
Okay. I'd also, thanks, Rachel. I'd also add that, for instance, like before I'm going to go on the record on saying anything is 100% pure or, you know, 100% on anything, like, for instance, the Mac E Fascia project from Marcia, I've been working with it for 3 years now in order to prove it. And so far, I mean, after 3 seasons, I'm confident. Now, I wasn't confident last year, but I'm confident this year that I can say that they're only possible head eclipse. So I have, you know, a line of awesome Max Snow E Fasciolatus that is only possible head eclipse. So that's, but that's what you got to do. It's going to take years for you to be confident about these things. Yes, and some people are going to be more trustworthy than others. At that, I mean, that's another.
Well, exactly. I mean, there's always, you're right. So, but yeah, record keeping is vital. I mean, I do mine on note cards and on an Excel spreadsheet. I mean,
that's good.
I double dip, you know. I do. I mean, because I guess I'm just anal that way when it comes to that. I mean, I've been down this road before reading other things, and you know, you get in a situation where, I don't know what that is.
Well, you never know when certain pertinent information will be important to you. Like, even something that's, 25% het, you know, may come into play 2 years from now. Like, let me check on that female that's the grandmother of so-and-so. Let me find out if she is 25% het eclipse. You know, you may need that information. And, you know, that's important. But, okay, let's go ahead and grab this next caller. Let's see. Caller from the 570 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hello?
Hi, caller.
Hello?
There.
Oh, yeah, hi. This is Dominic.
Hey, Dominic.
Hi, Dominic.
Good. How are you doing?
Good. What can we do for you tonight?
I had a question about when a leopard gecko is hatched out, it's like 3 times bigger than usual.
Is this Dominic Brack?
Yes.
Hey, Dominic. Which one is it that hatched out huge?
It's a snow. And I asked Ron, and he said it's a possibility, but it would take about 9 months.
Well, it's a possibility.
Yeah, to determine whether it's giant or something.
Yeah.
Okay. What were the parents?
The parents were. Let me see. I got an Enigma, and then just a snow. I don't know the heads. I have to prove it out.
Oh. Okay. Well, let's think about it this way. Now, when I hatch out giants, they are usually, even the eggs are bigger. So they are usually at least, 4 to 5 grams right from the get. Usually normal leopard geckos are 2.5 to 3 grams at hatching from what I've seen. And then like E. fasciolatus, I've been hatching them out at 5 grams. But giants will hatch out sometimes at 4 and 5 grams. So if you – now here's the other thing. John Scarborough, for instance, believes that the giant gene may be recessive. And who knows? You know, I mean – it could be. So maybe you have a het giant. For instance, Ron believes it's a dominant and codominant trait, but in his collection it may act that way because he's got giant in basically everything. So maybe it's just hatching out that way and it just appears to him as codominant. I'm not saying he's wrong or John's wrong either, but you never know. But anyway, maybe you do have giant
Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if you didn't actually purchase actual giants from someone that's breeding with confirmed giants, there's no way to verify it, and there's no way that you would ever be able to put a name on it as an actual giant. So that's just to keep that in mind. But if you're just trying to figure it out.
Did you get them from Ron by chance, Dominic?
Oh, no, I would have known what they were head for with a guy from Ron.
Okay, yeah. Well, I was just curious.
So it's just random.
Because I picked up.
Have fun with it, Dominic. See what happens.
Yeah.
It was born on Mother's Day, and it's, like, 3 weeks old, and it's, like, 11 grams right now.
Wow, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, some of them just
there you go.
Huge and fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
You never know.
Well, let's see, post some pictures of it in the group. I'd like to see it, Dominic.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
All right.
All right. Thanks for calling in, bud.
Thanks, Don.
All right. Let's go ahead and grab the
Wow,
next
that's
call.
Big. That's big.
Well, yeah, and, you know, that's cool. I think it's cool, but there's a lot of people out there that, you know, hatch out big geckos or buy a big gecko at a show, and they'll hit me up and they'll say, Dave,
well,
is this a giant? How do I know?
That's what I was going to say. You know, I've hatched out 17 babies now I've hatched, okay? And I just had two bandits that hatched over the weekend, and they were 4.5 grams, both of them. And they're from Ron.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everything else, you're right, everything else I've hatched out, 2 to 3 grams. And both, I mean,
everything
the eggs were
from
bigger.
Ron is big.
Yeah, but I know, you know, because I've hatched out two bandits from the same pair already, and they hatched out, you know, 3 grams. And then these two eggs hatch, and, I mean, you know, the babies are bigger, you know, they're 4, 4.5 grams. But they're just,
well,
you know, I don't think they're giants, but they're just bigger. That was my point. I think it just depends on the animals.
I think anything that comes from Ron has the possibility of carrying the giant gene. I just, because all of his geckos run big. I mean, I've seen, for instance, I bought geckos from Ron, and big geckos will hatch out 2 and 3 generations down the line, like huge giants. Like, for instance, Heather from Airway Geckos just hatched out last year this huge gecko, and I have it in the collection.
Right.
And I'm actually going to put it up for sale soon. It's obviously a giant, and it comes from Ron's lineage. So it's, you know, it's, I mean, the parents weren't sold to me as giants, but the gecko's like 100 grams. I mean, it's huge. And I just think that it's in his stuff. And if you go back in his history, he tells you, like, the same gecko, Bubba, has produced all these
yeah.
large geckos. So, and he's done a
well,
lot
my
of
two,
breeding
my
with geckos.
Two raptors. Yeah, the two raptors, mm-hmm. the two pastel raptors that I got from him, I got them, they were, say, 15, 17 grams. They were pretty small. You
right.
know, and now both of those, you know, I've conversed with him back and forth. You know, both of them are 85, you know, the male's probably getting close to 90 grams now, 85, 90 grams, you know, and that's, you know, Ron said, well, you got lucky. I usually don't sell them that small. He said, but you probably got giants out of them, you know, and
yeah.
I think you're right. Coming from Ron, you never know.
That's right. And they're just, I like that, though. I like the fact that his geckos just run big.
Yeah.
Just hardy,
they're
robust.
Nice. So, yeah. Yep.
Mm.
Give
All
us
right,
another
let's
call.
Go ahead and take this. Yep. Next caller from the 214 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey, Daryl. Hey, David. Sean.
What's up,
hey,
Sean?
Hey, Sean. How are you?
How you guys? Doing good, guys. Sorry, I got in a little bit late. I was running some errands, but I have a question
okay.
for you, Daryl. Since you were a breeder
okay.
of snakes and rodents and things like that, what's besides the morphs and learning the genetics? What's the one thing that you've had the most difficult time with, and one piece of advice that you can give someone that's just starting out breeding?
Ah, great question.
Good question. The best thing that the best advice I can give you is keep an open mind, because it's not daunting. It just seems that way. It's like, you know, there's you know, you hear people all the time, don't be scared of it. You know, like. Whenever you first start messing with a computer, you're afraid you're going to break it. It's the same thing with genetics. You just got to wrap your mind around it, and it's mathematics. And a lot of people don't like mathematics. But when you're dealing with the recessive genes, I mean, it is just that. I mean, it's just like eye color in humans. It's, you know, I mean, it's a recessive dominant trait. That's the easiest one to deal with. What confuses people, I think, in the gecko business is whenever you start dealing with the polygenetic traits, the line bred
yeah.
traits, you know, that really confuses people because, yes, when you do it for generation after generation after generation, it acts like a recessive, but in reality it's not, you know, so that confuses people. And they say,
yeah.
well, is it a recessive trait or is it not? No, it's not, but whenever you do it long enough, it acts like one. So that's the big thing, you know, keep an open mind. You know, Ron's book is really great at explaining that. You know, you can find a lot of stuff online that will go into great details and really confuse you, but it's not that difficult. You just got to comprehend what's going on and pay attention. You know, I mean, a recessive trait, you've got to have it on both sides, you know, just like blue eye color. We'll get into that in a minute, but, you know, blue eye color is a double recessive trait. You know, if you've got blue eyes, you know, your mother and your father had blue eyes, or your father had brown eyes, but he was carrying a blue eye gene. See, that confuses everybody.
Yeah.
You know? And, but
no,
but it's really not that.
Well, what kind of pitfalls have you hit, though, breeding leopard geckos, besides genetics?
The pitfalls. The only pitfalls.
You know, snakes and rodents are different, so.
Yeah, exactly.
What's been your biggest learning, the biggest learning curve you've had to deal with breeding leopard geckos besides snakes and genetics behind the leomorph?
You know, I guess with me understanding a little bit about genetics to begin with and being in the snake game, I had a leg up. So I was really, you can ask Dave, you know, I bounced a lot of stuff off of him, but I knew what I was looking for whenever I was buying, you know, my original animals that I've got, and I knew what I wanted, and that's what I cut out the middleman. I didn't go in for a lot of het stuff. You know, I wanted to, you know, if I wanted, you know, an extreme emmerine, that's what I got. Well, what can I get to make an extreme emmerine, or what can I get to make, you know, whatever, you know, a radar, you know, stuff like that. So, I mean, I knew kind of what I wanted to do, and then I bounced a lot of questions off of Ron first and then Dave, and then I've talked to John, you know, but the only thing that I did that was a little contradicting to that is the last time I went and saw Ron, I told him, I said, okay, I want a pair of something that is going to throw a lot of variables so I can show Cade, you know, here's mama, here's daddy, and look at all this diverse stuff that we got out of it. And so he ended up giving me or selling me a blood emmerine white and yellow female and a blood emmerine male. So it's going to throw, you know, a gambit of different things. You know, and that's the only one that I really went, you know, a little different with. But all my stuff is pretty clean, you know, pretty straight and straightforward. Because I was worried about knowing that the genetics in the leopard geckos is pretty muddied up as far as terminology and the way things are working. I went pretty straight and narrow, so whenever I bred it, I knew what to look for and say, okay, this is this, this is that. So there's not going to be a whole lot of guessing games. But
yeah. Did the snows throw you off? Because snow and the snake is completely different from gecko. So when you first started,
it's completely different.
Call snow and the snakes are completely different from the snow. That's the biggest thing I deal with when I'm talking to my friends that are breeders of snakes. They're like, this one is snow. Well, yeah, it is. Because you're dealing with the albino
right.
crazy snake.
Yes, you're right, because the snow is definitely a recessive trait in snakes, you know, like corn snakes and stuff. But that is a little different, and especially, you know, whenever you start dealing with a different snow lines and then the line bred, you know, Albie's line bred snow, I mean, that throws a different kink into things all the way around. And that confuses people, I'm sure.
You had a good beginning though, because you dealt with snakes. I know that the terminology was a little different, but you did have a leg up, like on the genetics behind how to do what, you know, how to get to that point, what you wanted to get to. So, what I've seen, you're doing a great job. So, but I wanted to touch real quick on what you were talking about. Well, I just wanted to touch real quick, and I'll let you guys go. But I was, you were talking about tracking. And I caught, you know, some of that conversation. I forget who the caller was that was asking about lineage and
Rachel.
Rachel. And you know, you talked about using a spreadsheet. And we've used spreadsheets for quite a while. Lori's like, that's her thing. But we also have...
Yeah, I'm kind of that way as well. I'm a spreadsheet junkie.
We have spreadsheets that I usually update, but we have notebooks, like, stacked of, like, college notebooks, the black and white ones.
Yes.
Of everything that we have hard data on, so if we do lose the computer data, that's a good thing to keep. You know, you may say it's something that you do that's anal, but it's actually a good safety, because if something happens and you lose your computer, you lose all your data on your computer, you're lost.
Absolutely.
So
I keep a clipboard in here in my room, you know, and I'll jot stuff down.
Yeah,
and then.
Absolutely.
Of course, going to Ron's, you know, I write down all the egg information and breeding information on the front of the in front of the cages with wax pencil, you know, and then I jot it down on a clipboard, And
I put it on a note card.
I've got a note card on every animal. I put it down on a note card, and then I put it in a spreadsheet for everything.
We're working on a database right now. We're going to try to release it by the end of the year through Access. Because there's a lot of herp tracking software out there, but there's nothing really geared towards leopard geckos. Most of it is snakes.
Right.
So we're actually trying to put together a database that we can make as open source, so it'll be free for everyone to use. And as soon as that's available,
cool.
We'll probably put it on the Gecko Nation place for download. You know, we'll put some links up. But
yeah.
Keeping the hard copies, man, that's a good idea. That's a good thing that people just starting out need to know. It kind of sounded like you're kind of worried about saying that, but I think it's a great thing that you keep both
yeah.
sides of that, because you never know what's going to happen. I have hard drives I back up everything on, but
sure.
you never know. So keeping those note cards and everything, like you're saying, that's perfect, and that's a good tip
yeah.
for people starting out. Keep double copies of everything.
Yeah, hey, and John, advice. I hadn't forgot about you know, I told you I was going to order some roaches from you. My buddy got snake
oh, yeah.
bit, and he's in the hospital in Odessa, so that's why I hadn't ordered him yet. I don't know when he's going to be back home. So
no,
as soon as he does,
we got plenty.
I'll send you an order.
Yes, sir.
All right. Cool. Thanks, Sean.
Great.
Thanks for calling in. All right. Thanks,
yeah, thanks, Sean.
All right. Hey, Sean, what are you doing tonight? You want to do a conference call with me and Daryl?
Yeah, sure.
Great. Yeah, because I'm off for the next week, so perfect.
Yeah, I've been posting pictures and taking updated pictures and playing around in the gecko room, so I'll be up feeding and cleaning tonight. So,
Let's do it.
Cool.
That'd be great.
Just message me, and I'll call.
All right, sounds good. Thanks
cool.
for calling in.
All right.
Thanks, Sean.
Later, guys.
All right. Got a few more callers here. Let's see. Caller from the 515
okay.
area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio. 515,
hello.
You there?
Yeah, sorry. Hi, my name is Levi, owner of Vista Gecko. My question
hey, Levi.
Is,
hi, Levi.
I know this is kind of off topic to where you guys have been talking about languages and Leos for the night, but I'm curious, have you guys had any personal hands-on experience with the northern spiny-tailed gecko or any of the Strophorus species?
I have experience with Strophorus tanacata, I guess that's how you pronounce it.
Right.
They seem pretty delicate. I actually didn't keep it for very long. I wound up selling it. It just seemed a little bit delicate for me, but they are they're pretty cool. What are you looking for, husbandry advice?
Oh, well, I'm just kind of looking at a couple different species. I've been dabbling with Leos and monitors for a while now, and I've had some great success. But I kind of want to adventure off into I hate to say it, but a little bit more delicate species of gecko, either like the
mm-hmm.
satanic species and or
yeah.
like what I've, the northern spiny tail is what I'm really, really wanting to push for. And I just wanted some advice on how to go about doing so, other than just the basic husbandry you can find out there.
Okay, I have the perfect person for you. And he was
I was
thinking
to say,
large...
I know somebody.
Yeah. Yep, Joe Huff.
You're going
Joe
the same
Huff
way I was going,
show.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on our show about 2 months ago or so, Levi. His name is Joe Hupp.
Yeah.
And he's on Facebook. He's got about, I don't know, 200 different species going right now. And,
and
not only did he give
cool
a great interview,
and...
but, yeah, he'll be
yeah.
able to direct you perfectly with what you're looking to do.
And Levi, I've conversed with him. We've messaged back and forth, and he's a very nice guy, and he will answer any of your questions no matter how rudimentary you think they are. He's a great guy, and if he doesn't know, probably nobody does.
All right. I just figured I'd hit on that topic because I know that here in the group of Gecko Nation, we really focus on Leos, but not a whole lot of any other species out there.
Well,
now I've seen other threads and whatnot.
I want to see more diversity.
Yeah, do it.
It seems that everybody loves
yeah.
leopard geckos, so. I want to see some more diversity.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Group, so.
I'm curious. You get some. Throw some pictures up. I love looking at all that stuff for sure.
Well, with research, I predict that I'm roughly about 4 to 6 months out from getting my first pair, and then raising them, and then to the first breeding season. And I'm very excited and hopeful to this little project.
Cool.
Hey, that's
cool.
What it's
sounds
all about.
Like
if you've got the passion. and the want to, sky's the limit.
Well, exactly. That's right. All right, guys. I don't want to take too much of your time, but thank you.
Thanks, Levi.
Thanks, Levi.
All right. We got another one here. Caller from the 916 area code. You're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hello. Is that me?
That's you.
That's
sir.
You.
916. Is this Mark?
Hey. Hi there, David. I lost track of time and just got on.
Okay. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm having a great time being a new gecko breeder, and as you know, I've been learning on the fly, and I've got a really good beginning for my breeding projects. Tangerines. Bloods, bell albinos, bell stripe or bold stripe bell albinos, which I really like. They have such a sweet temperament.
Good gentle.
Yeah, they're really sweethearts. I really like those anyway, I'm kind of at a loss for words right now, I guess.
That's
what's your
okay.
name?
This is Mark.
Mark.
Yeah. My name is Mark Muris. I live in Sacramento, and when my company becomes a company, it'll be River City Geckos.
There you go.
I'm at the hobbyist level right now, and this fall I'll start incubating a fair amount of eggs, and then next year it's probably going to explode on me.
It doesn't take long. Take it from me, who just started, you know, about a year. And, yeah, a few will produce a lot of eggs. So get ready. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to things because I've invested a pretty good amount of money into some real nice geckos. And I can see there's going to be all kinds of interesting results that I'm going to want to hang on to and work with, which means I'm going to need more and more racks.
Exactly.
He's
got it. Yeah, the bug has got him. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Quality is the key. Mark.
Oh, yeah. I've got some beautiful geckos. I got two from David that are really beautiful. I've got several from Marcia McGinnis that are really beautiful. And I've got a couple of Amarines that I got from Ron Tremper, and they are beautiful.
Yeah.
And
there you go. You're getting them from the right spots, that's for sure.
Yeah. I can't forget Steve Sykes. He lives about 5 miles from me, I've got a number of geckos from him also.
You don't just go down there and hang out and drool, do you?
I wish I could. He's pretty strict about his facility. He doesn't. I meet him, you know, to pick my geckos up, so there's no shipping, but he doesn't, as a rule, bring people to his facility.
Really?
So you
need to come to Texas. You need to come to Texas. You can walk in Ron's facility, and he'll give you the grand tour.
Yeah. That's a little ways
amazing.
From me, but...
Yeah, exactly.
I'd have to fly, but...
That'd be a road trip for sure, wouldn't it?
Who is this I'm talking to?
Daryl Burton.
Daryl, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so, I'm new. Yeah, the new
guy.
Yeah,
so. I came in on this pretty late, and I didn't realize it was, you know, past the, you know, the time. So,
that's okay.
So anyway.
Never too late.
Where are you?
I am in Midland, Odessa, Texas, which is about halfway between Dallas and El Paso on 20.
Okay.
So,
do you have a website going and all that?
Not yet. I will soon have one, and when I do, I will post it in the nation and let everybody know. So,
Yeah, I don't have one yet either, and you know that's a bridge I'm going to have to cross at some point. And
I haven't come up with a name yet.
Pardon?
Yeah.
We should do a special show about that, having a how to start a gecko business.
Exactly.
I'm a little bit apprehensive about crossing that bridge and just how to do it and so on.
Exactly. I'm with you.
But I know it's something that's definitely necessary. I've been working on my photography lately. I bought a new camera, and
that's
and,
important.
You know, I'm working on setting up a little studio setup where I can photograph my geckos and get it done, you know, fairly quickly. And what I've come up with so far is I've got a big black tub. And then I went over to the materials place, you know, where they sell rock and stuff. And I found this boulder type rock that's mostly a gray tone, and it kind of slopes up, and I can take my gecko and let him loose at the bottom of the rock, and his natural inclination is to walk up the rock. And I've got some plastic plants in there, and so he kind of walks right up into a rocky grassland scene, and I quick shoot some shots and
cool.
then crop them later that's pretty much as far as I got, and it seems to be working out pretty well.
Yeah, if people wouldn't get mad at me, I would glue their little feet down so they wouldn't mock, but I think people would get mad at me about that.
Yeah, they don't stop moving, that's for sure. Never. All right, Mark, we got to get moving here, but thanks for calling in, bud.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mark.
Nice talking to you. Bye.
Yeah, absolutely.
You too, bye.
All right. Hey, Daryl, before we forget, tell us that thing. Daryl told me this story not too long ago, and it cracked me up. But it just goes to show you, it's a story about genetics and how, Daryl, tell us the story.
Okay, back in the 70s, my sophomore, biology class, in my sophomore biology class in high school, which is the guy that got me interested in snakes, anyway, we're in class and he's teaching us genetics, and we're talking about simple Mendelian genetics, and everybody had a pair of mice. Because, you know, he was breeding rodents to feed his snakes, so we were the guinea pigs. So we would breed these mice and, you know, try to determine the genetics once the offspring came, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, he's doing a simple little lecture, and he gets to talking about eye color in humans. And it is on it's a sex-linked gene, and on the X chromosome is your eye color. And he goes in talking, you know, brown is dominant, you know, hazel is, you know, kind of throws a little kink and everything. But anyway, he gets to talking about blue eyes is a double recessive trait. And so he makes this comment in class. He says, if you are blue-eyed, you know, both of your parents are blue, you know, will have blue eyes. And he said, this kid this kid raises his hand, which, you know, I grew up with, and says, hey, both my parents... You know, his statement was, if both your parents have blue eyes, you're going to have blue eyes. Well, this kid throws up his hand. He says, both of my parents have blue eyes, and I've got brown eyes. Well, you know, this is the 70s, and this biology teacher of mine looks at him and says, well, then your father is not your father, or you're adopted. He says, no, I'm not adopted. And, I mean, it caused a big stink in a little bitty town of about 3,000 people. I mean, nearly got this biology teacher fired because at the end of the day, it all came out. His dad was not his dad, but nobody knew that but his parents. And so, I mean, it was a big to-do and come unraveled in a small town in West Texas. And, you know, I mean, the only saving grace was he was telling the truth. You know,
right.
If both your parents have blue eyes,
all you can have is blue eyes.
And didn't,
you know,
the teacher get suspended and everything too?
Well, he got sent home with you know, with pay for a little while until it all, you know, went in front of the school board and, you know, and then it all came out. But that yes, that his father really wasn't his father. And you know, and here's, you know, small towns being small towns. If you didn't grow up in a small town, you can't appreciate this. But you know, I go home and tell my mom about it, and my mom tells me, you know, oh yeah, you know, his dad is so and so. You know, I mean, everybody in town knew it, but the kid didn't know. You know, we didn't know. You don't think about things
man.
Like that whenever. But yeah, it was a big stink there for about 6 weeks.
Hell of a way to find
so,
out, though. Right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. So
interesting,
but it was pretty comical.
Yeah, well, we're coming to the end of your episode here, Daryl, and I gotta tell you, it's been a lot of fun, of course, and you know you're gonna be a regular on the show. In fact, you know, we've talked about doing the co-hosting and stuff. So yeah, I just want to also give you the chance. Yeah, give you a minute here to have some closing remarks or anything else you'd like to mention before we wrap things up.
All you people out there listening, if you come up with a name for me and my future endeavors, just shoot something on the nation, throw it out there. We'll make up a name for me one of these days or whatever. But my closing remarks would be for anybody that is in this hobby, do it because you enjoy it. Do what you want, do what you love. You know, don't do it if you think you're going to get rich. There's been a lot of people starved to death in the reptile business thinking they're going to get rich. That's not the key. You got to enjoy what you do and breed what you want, what you like. If you do it correctly and produce quality animals, you're not going to have any trouble getting rid of them. If you try to cut corners, you're going to have problems. But that's my deal. You know, if it's leopard geckos, if it's ball pythons, if it's corn snakes, if it's whatever, do it because you enjoy it. Don't do it thinking you're going to become a millionaire. And you might. I mean, there's always that possibility, but my deal is do what you love and have fun doing it. If you're not having fun, you're not going to enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, you're going to be out. Before long, you'll get tired of it and move on to bigger and better things. So,
yeah.
And at the end of the day, you're dealing with live animals that depend on you to take care of them. So if you're not going to enjoy it and do it because you love it, you're not going to take care of them the way they need to be taken care of. So,
yeah. Well,
but have
well
fun.
Said,
that's my key.
That's right. I want to thank everybody. We had 22 people in the chat room tonight, Daryl. I think those are around the same amount of people in the chat room as were there for Brian Barczyk, so you're a pretty popular guy.
Well, I don't know if I'm on that scale or not, but
well, the show is becoming increasingly popular, so I'm not, you know, it's either or maybe it's you too. So I don't want to take it away from you.
Well,
people like you.
Like I said, it's 6 degrees of separation, man. This thing is exploding.
I know, it's crazy.
And I love it.
I gotta approve another 50 people that are waiting to get into the group, and they're sitting there. I have to, you know, approve them all. I haven't gotten a chance to do it yet, but yeah, at least what do we got? Like 100 or so new people a week now, right? Joining the Gecko Nation.
Oh, at least
maybe even more.
Yeah,
yeah.
It would be more. I think you're slow playing it so you don't have to eat a cricket.
No, it's happening the way it's happening. Angela, not answering. Angela just posed a question in the chat. Yes, I am going to have Anastasia from NetBug on the show, and we're going to talk all about tarantulas. And Daryl's going to be
can't
my host
wait.
For that. Yep. So that's
I can't wait.
Soon,
I want to talk to her real bad. Yeah.
Yep. Hang tight. She's very knowledgeable. She's very very funny too. She's cool. But yeah, we'll be doing that soon. All right, Daryl. Well, I'm not going to keep you. We'll talk again tonight. We're going to do a conference call with you and I and Sean. And I had another idea. Maybe in the future we can record our conference calls and maybe post them up on the blog talk here. Maybe we can put something like that together too. So
hey, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
You know, you you never know whenever you have those late night druid worships, conference calls, you know, lots of good information comes out of that. A lot of
trivial
stuff as well, but there's a lot of good information.
Absolutely. But you know what? People like the casual stuff. And, you know, whenever we've done a casual type of show, it's always gone over very well. Just as well as the more structured interviews. So we're going to do more of that in the future, guys. And like I said, everybody out there that's listening, if you have any ideas for the show and how we can improve and what you'd like us to do, email me at geckonationradio@gmail.com. All right, we're going to go into the recorded part of the show. You'll be able to hear the very end when you download it. So, Daryl, I'm going to let you go, and we'll talk to you tonight.
Thanks, Dave.
All right, anytime. Talk to you soon. All right, folks, another terrific episode. I want to thank everybody that participated in the chat room, everybody that's still listening to the show. I am going to play the outro and come back with my closing remarks, and I'm going to play a cool song. Hang tight, folks.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David Fine Gecko's creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. The jazz music you heard tonight was generously donated and created by Jeremy Turgeon of J&D Reptiles. Thank you very much, Jeremy, for the great musical pieces. You can check out Jeremy at J&D Reptiles on YouTube and on Facebook. And a very special thank you to our news anchor, graphic designer, and audio tech, Steve Barker. All the graphics, audio sponsor plugs, and music overlays were assembled by Steve. Check out Steve on YouTube at BC Barker Creations. He has some terrific videos for the herp community with amazing geckos and snakes.
Please support the U.S. Herpetocultural Alliance and USARC. Gecko Nation Radio is proud to support both of these organizations. Please donate to USARC so that they have the funds needed to legally protect pet owners' rights nationwide. You can donate to the USARC Legal Defense Fund at www.usarc.org. If you would also like to learn about advocacy and how you can take action on a state and local level, please subscribe to the U.S. Herpetocultural Alliance newsletter and blog at www.usherp.org.
All right, folks, another great episode comes to a close, and for my closing remarks, I'd like to mention to everyone that if you found herpetoculture, if you found leopard geckos or snakes or whatever it is that really fascinates you, I believe that we all have a responsibility to get others involved, especially if we're going to be breeding and selling offspring. Because if we don't create new enthusiasts and new customers, everybody's kind of just, you know, picking from the same customer base. So I think it's all of our responsibility to encourage new people not only to get them involved in this great hobby so that they can enjoy it, but also to help with, you know, the pool of animals. Because there's a lot of controversy today about price drops and the market and auctions and this and that. If there are enough customers, there won't be any problems. If there's enough people that are interested in reptiles and herpetoculture that are buying them and investing, there's not going to be any issues. So that's from my thoughts. That's my opinion today. I may change that opinion tomorrow. That's kind of how I feel about things right now. Hope that resonates with you, and I hope you guys can maybe expand on that. And, you know, let me know your ideas. We're going to be doing a complete show about the market, auctions, pricing. Coming up soon, I am picking a panel of very knowledgeable and experienced breeders and sellers so that we can, you know, basically break it down and just have a really educated discussion about the topic. All right, I think it's important and it's timely. A lot of people want to know, like, why are the prices the way they are, and what is it about auctions that people don't like? Are auctions good for the industry? And all these different types of questions are going to come up. So I'll keep you guys posted. That show is probably going to come up in the next couple weeks. Now, next weekend, very important show for Canadians. We're going to learn exactly what it takes to ship animals to Canada and vice versa. All right, that's important. That's something a lot of people want to learn how to do, breeders here in the U.S. We have a huge customer base in Canada that's just waiting to be able to acquire our animals here.
So I hope that I can help breeders in the U.S. discover how to do it, okay? So you tune in for that show next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern. All right, folks. Before I play the song, I just want to go through our list of sponsors, okay, because our sponsors are awesome. These sponsors, these sponsor plugs are sincere, okay? The people that sponsor the show are people that I know that I can stand behind, and these are businesses and breeders that are just the best at what they do, highly reputable and ethical. All right, number one, Dale's Bearded Dragons. If you guys need any kind of reptile supplies, exotherms, heat pads, supplements, anything at all, DalesBeardedDragons.com is the place to get them. If they don't have it on the website, you can, I'll put you in, directly in touch with the owner, Mario, and he'll get you what you need, all at 20 to 50% cheaper than your local pet stores, okay? And if you see them at any of the Northeast shows, mention Gecko Nation Radio, and you're going to get 10% off, okay? Gecko Nation Radio to Dale's Bearded Dragons at any of the expos, automatic 10% off. Cool. AVDragons.com sells the highest quality of Juvia roaches. They are fed the highest and best quality foods. These roaches are just the best roaches you can buy for your insect-eating reptiles. Check out abdragons.com. They also sell FlexWatt reptile heat tape, which, of course, is the top-of-the-line and safest heat tape product in the world. Okay? Don't be fooled by imitations claiming to be more advanced or better. They're not. FlexWatt is the latest technology, and it's the most safest that you can use to heat your racks and custom cages. And AB Dragons has a standing code for 5% off. It's Gecko, all in caps. Use it at checkout. All right. GeckoBoa.com, John Scarborough, very, very respected breeder in the community. He's working with some amazing subspecies and wild-type leopard geckos. Okay, also very big into white and yellows and really nice trimpers and bell stuff. Check him out, GeckoBoa.com. Supreme Gecko, Wally Kern, has some great Presties and day geckos and sell some supplies too, like food and stuff. So check out SupremeGecko.com. And they'll take care of you. Very good breeder. Ohio Gecko, that also runs gecko farms. Check out OhioGecko.com. It's got amazing lines of tangerines and snows and fattails. Really nice stuff, guys. So OhioGecko.com is definitely another well-respected breeder to get your animals from. Rainbow Mealworms, best feeder company I found. Best prices, highest quality worms. Check them out, rainbowmealworms.net. There is no rainbowmealworms.com. It's rainbowmealworms.net, okay? Check them out. Jillian Spence runs Rainbow, nicest person. She's a doll, and she regularly takes care of the community with special promotions and whatnot, okay? One of those promotions just ended, but I'm sure there'll be another one in the future. They still have the best prices anyway, so check them out, rainbowmealworms.net, biggest worm farm in the world. All right, reptilesexpress.com is the best live animal shipping company. Use them to ship your animals in the U.S. anywhere, okay? Reptilesexpress.com, they have all kinds of heat packs, shipping boxes, anything you guys need to ship your animals, and they also have the best customer service. Honest, ethical shipping company. Check them out. Ron Tremper is the king. Gotta love Ron. Ron Tremper has basically gifted us the world of leopard geckos. If it wasn't for him, we would not be this far into morph making and what we're doing. Ron Tremper's website is leopardgecko.com. Check him out. He's always got something amazing for sale. We've talked about him a few times tonight. And I've got some of my best projects from him. Everybody that's really heavily into leopard geckos, sooner or later, has gotten something from Ron or one of their projects is from Ron. Amazing stuff. Amazing breeder. All right, GiantLeopardGecko.com is another great breeder for super-sized leopard geckos, all kinds of cool morphs. Check out GiantLeopardGecko.com. That's Keith Kiggins. He's got some really great fat tails and some cresties, too, and he's one of our newer sponsors, so we're happy to have him on board. And, of course, MS2 Premium Insect Chow by Marcy Sowers. If you want to feed your feeder insects the best food, MS2 Chow. You can get it at Rainbow Mealworms, and you can buy it direct from Marcy. All right. We have one more sponsorship spot available. So if anybody wants to advertise with Gecko Nation Radio and reach thousands of people worldwide, now's your chance. Email me at gecko nation radio@gmail.com. All right, folks. I want to thank everybody for making Gecko Nation and the Gecko Nation Radio show a huge success. and we're going to take you out with a cool song. Hang tight, folks. Until next week. And by the way, this is Daryl Burton's favorite song. I asked him what song he'd like for his show. I said, what's your favorite? This is what he told me. So if you don't, if it's corny, it's not my pick, it's his. Here you go.
She was a waitress at the only joint in town. She had a reputation as a girl who'd been around. Down Main Street after midnight, brand new pack of cigs, a fresh one hanging from her lips, a beer between her legs. She'd ride down to the river and meet with all her friends. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. Sonny was a loner, older than the rest. He was going in the Navy but couldn't pass the test. So he hung around town, he sold a little pot. The law caught wind of Sonny, one day he got caught. But he was back in business when they set him free again. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. Sonny's playing eight ball at the joint where Cher works, when some drunken out of towner put his hand up Cher's skirt. Sonny took his pool cue, laid the drunk out on the floor, stuffed a dollar in a tip jar, walked on out the door. She's running right behind him, reaching for his hand. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. They jumped into his pickup, Sonny jammed her down in gear. Sonny looked at Cher, said, let's get on out of here. The stars were high above him, the moon was in the east. The sun was setting on him when they reached Miami Beach. They got a hotel by the water and a port of Bombay gin. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. They soon ran out of money, but Sonny knew a man who knew some Cuban refugees, a Delta contraband. Sonny met the Cuban in a house just off the roof, with a briefcase full of money and a pistol in his boot. The cards were on the table when the law came busting in. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. The Cubans grabbed the goodies, Sonny grabbed the jack. He broke a bathroom window and climbed on out the back. Sherry drove the pickup through the alley on the side, where a lawman tackled Sonny and was reading him his rights. She stepped out in the alley with a single shot 410. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. Lawman line, they made their getaway. Got back to the motel just before the break of day. Sonny gave her all the money and it blew a little kiss. If they ask you how this happened, say I forced you into this. She watched him as his taillights disappeared around the bend. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. After midnight, just like it was before, 21 months later at the local grocery store, Cher buys a paper and a cold six-pack of beer. The headlines read that Sonny is going to the chair. She pulls back on the main street in her new Mercedes Benz. The road goes on forever and the party never ends. Thank you.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.